Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Brian Lanny, founder and editor of the Junior Stock Review website, also writer of their premium newsletter where Brian does dive more into the stocks that he likes. And Brian, we're going to focus a bit more on the stock section of precious metals right now. Look, we all know that precious metals continue to be under pressure, and the stocks even more so have continued to lead the metals, the precious metals, lower. So whether you're looking at majors, the whole way down to juniors, mostly everything has sold off. But we're going to focus on one sector here, those being the developers. We've had a number of these companies on that, let's say, have about 1 million ounces or even more than 1 million ounces that just seem to not be getting any love, even though some of these projects are shown, at least through some of the economic studies, to be profitable at lower metals prices and very profitable, even around that $1,750 level for gold. They're still not getting any love. Brian, what do you think? Why are developers so, unfortunately, ignored in this market?
Thanks for having me, guys. That's a really good question. You know, I don't know, because to me, the value proposition is so clear. And like I've said before, I much prefer investing in things that have, you know, actual ounces in the ground. And, you know, by my estimation, I think that they're economic ounces. So for me, it's quite the feeding frenzy, so to speak, as I, you know, dive through a list that's only grown over the last couple of weeks, especially this week. There's a couple of companies that have, you know, for whatever reason, sold off, and I've added them to my short list of companies to compare against. And it's the perfect environment for those that can, I guess, see further than the market. You know, why these stocks sell off, you know, I'm really not sure. I think because, you know, when you talk about exploration, it's all about the hope and, you know, the potential of what could be there. And that mystery is seemingly what probably keeps investors interested and sort of numb, not only to the risk, but, you know, the boredom maybe of when a company is just, you know, adding more ounces to their already, you know, sizable deposit. So maybe that monotony is what gets investors bored. But for me, it's the exact opposite. You know, this is the perfect environment to be adding, you know, good quality companies to your portfolio. But the only time when you have some real choice, you know, last year or 12 months ago, it was getting really hard to find companies that were selling for less than they were worth. And really, I think, you know, for me, I did make a couple errors, and it was errors of optimism. And in reality, when you find those moments where you can't find things that are selling for less than you're worth, it's time to sell, and it's time to look for something that is hated or unloved, and start your search there. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Brian, that the developers, as a general thumb, not just in the gold stocks, but even in a lot of the silver stocks, have been beaten down pretty bad at this point in the cycle after the correction over the last year and a half. And so one of the questions I have is, why do you think it is, and maybe you already alluded to it with the narrative portion, or that people are want to see and explore to see how big it can get, but I wonder why it is that if there's 1 million ounces or 2 million ounces in the ground, or some of these companies have 3 or 4 million ounces in the ground, that they're being assigned very little value. Is it just because the gold price is sliding and so their economics are sliding? Or do you think that it's people are so far removed from what would be probably considered optionality plays that they want to wait until later in the cycle before they finally step into some of these development stage companies?
You know, I don't think there's one answer to that. There's not one general way. It's always going to depend on the exact company. I think some companies have, you know, those 1 million ounce deposits or multi-million ounce deposits, and they sell at a discount for very good reason. You know, in some cases they're located, you know, far north, let's say Northwest Territories, some parts of the Yukon, far flung, you know, I can think of other jurisdictions, but that's what popped into my head. And I think they sell at a discount, and rightfully so. You know, the tough areas are hard, even though you have, let's say, a somewhat high grade open pitable deposit, but it's located in the middle of nowhere. It becomes a lot harder, even if it is a gold deposit, that's going to be, you know, shipping out Dore or something like that. So I think, you know, those optionality plays are definitely the ones that sell off first and they sell off harder. And that's why I think you always want to kind of stick to the best of the best. But in, even in saying that, even the companies, some of the companies that I think that are very good or in that best of best, they still sell off too sometimes. And, I don't necessarily know why. The state of the world right now, where there's so much flux and uncertainty, I think that, maybe jurisdiction is one of those big points where you can have, you know, a company we've talked about before, like Montage. Montage is selling for a fraction of what they're worth. Some people might be concerned about grade. But I think it's perfectly fine, but maybe it's the Ivory Coast that people are more concerned about. And maybe that's why it sells off or sells at a discount continually. It's hard to say for sure. Because more and more these days, and I've sort of looked at jurisdiction a little bit different than in the past. Before I was more concerned with how a jurisdiction stacked up against other ones and, you know, what the potential risks are. But really, for me, it really does come down to value and what the discount is to that underlying value. And if I think that the project is actually legit, that I'm willing to take on that jurisdiction, just jurisdictional risk. And if I have to wait a bit longer, that's fine with me. You know, the timeline is maybe what scares a lot of investors. I want to make money now rather than I want to make money, you know, the 3-bagger or 4-bagger 2 years from now. And maybe that's more of the reason why you see some of these developers lose their allure, because they can't, or they probably won't show, you know, the big returns in the next month. Whereas those exploration companies or some of the maybe more exciting stories in tier one jurisdictions have that I can pay you, you know, today or tomorrow. And but it's an interesting topic. But like I said, this is the perfect environment for investors like myself. And I'm glad the market is melting down to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think you raised a couple great points there, Brian. Like, the jurisdiction risk is real and people do filter it based on different criteria. But you also made the point, if it's a good project, a good team, and it's eventually going to be a mine, Africa doesn't maybe attach everybody's attention like Montage. But I've also been part of 4 takeovers in Africa in the last couple of years where obviously the majors thought differently. And so one of the questions would be, when is it the right time for investors to look at optionality plays? Because if we do see a rise in the metals prices, generally optionality plays will outperform. They'll catch up to the stocks that were already hot. And the stocks that were already hot can still move in a good gold market. All stocks will move. But there's certain boats that will rise faster. So when we say all boats will rise with the tide, yes, but not at the same level. It's just like beaten down high margin producers will outperform the better producers in a metal uptick because they're going to get more of that upswing. So when you're looking at your developers and you're looking to kind of poach some of the deals now, besides jurisdiction, you brought up the time horizon. What are you looking for as a time horizon when you make an investment, Brian? And what are you looking for as the criteria to get that return over that time horizon?
Okay, so I'll answer like again two different ways. First, I'll say again, it's a general answer where, you know, it depends. It depends on numerous things, how I approach. I don't really have a set criteria myself for exactly what I'm looking for. You know, the investment thesis is different for each company, and it sort of comes together for me personally. But I think you can make money numerous different ways, just depending on how you want to sort out, you know, timeline, quality of project, people, you know, access to cash. All those certain things are going to kind of play into, you know, how you want to set it up. For me personally, right now, I want to concentrate on the best of the best because I don't know when the market is going to turn. So I want to always stick with the best people. I want to find a company that's got some cash. You know, cash is harder to raise right now than it was 12 months ago. But those groups that have been able to raise money in the past, they seemingly can find money from anywhere. And, you know, that's one of those big points that I want to look at is, you know, the assurity that these companies can raise money if they need to keep the thing going. Outside of that, it's really the price to value ratio that points me in the direction of where I'm going. If I see a big opportunity, let's say in a company like Montage, and this is not supposed to be a commercial for Montage, but it actually is a perfect example. I'm willing to wait the market out and see that upside that I see realized, even if it takes a little bit longer, because I'm very confident in the management team. I'm confident in their ability to develop that project in Africa. They've got all the right connections, in my view, that they'll be able to raise cash along the way. Right now, their market cap is obviously quite low. And thus, you know, are they going to raise capital to build that Kone mine right now? You know, probably not. But down the road, I think that they've got the right contacts to do that. So a company like that, I'm all in terms of the, you know, they're one of the top ranked companies in my portfolio, and I have the patience to see that through. In other cases, you know, I've seen jurisdictional risk come up, and depending on my comfort with the management, depending on what that jurisdictional risk is and the timeline I see for it to come, you know, to come to fruition, it's a lot different. So, you know, I have trouble answering stuff generally speaking, because quite honest, you know, it does change with each individual company, but generally speaking, it has to do with the quality and the price to value ratio that kind of dictates where I put my money.
So Brian, you're absolutely right about management and about management having past success so that they can continue to raise money, continue to advance the project. But when it comes to these developers, right around 1 million ounces, mostly lower grade, a lot of these, or at least the ones we're talking about, especially the ones that can outperform when we do get that rise in gold environment, what's the exit strategy? Do you want to see these things built or do you want to see them bought? Because M&A, it's been slow in this sector, and maybe there's just too many of these developers, low-grade 1 million ounce deposits.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. And that's probably the sticking point for those deposits that sit around 1 million ounces is who's going to want them. Depending on where the market goes, you know, the market for them might increase. But today, I think, you know, there is probably too many mediocre 1 million ounce deposits out there. And really, if the company doesn't have a way of expanding it or keeping the option open for the thing to be bigger, the reality is it's probably going to sit on a shelf for a little while longer until higher gold prices again rise all boats. And even if it's a good 1 million ounce deposit, it's probably going to do that. You know we've seen the major companies, numerous major companies, say that they're interested in certain production profiles. You know, this is 100,000 ounces plus per year, or total deposit size, you know, at least 3 to 5 million ounces, with the Barricks of the world saying that they want 5 million ounce plus. You know, there's very few of these in the world, and it makes you, or should tell you, that you, if you're looking at sticking to the best, these are the kind of numbers you need to be in. And if you're not there, then you could be waiting a while, especially if the management team is mediocre and, you know, can't really push the story to get bigger and better. So that's something, you know, investors, I think, need to keep in mind, that, you know, some of those 1 million ounce of deposits that aren't going to get bigger, and they're obviously their grade's not going to get any better. You know, these things are going to probably float around without any movement until we're in a real bull market. And, you know, you just keep that in mind.
Brian, I got another one for you. There's the 1 million ounce subpar deposits. I'm in agreement with you, but there's a lot that are now 2, 3, and 4 million ounce deposits, which is different than a 1 million ounce deposit. They're more rare, but a lot of them are projects that have been recycled 2 or 3 times already. And so a lot of times the market frowns on that and says, this thing's never going to happen. So what the companies have done, and here's my question for you, is they've said, okay, well, maybe we're not big enough yet. We're going to take it from 2 million to 4 million. We're going to take it from 3 million to 5 million. We're going to take it from 4 million to 10 million. And so they announced these in really huge drill programs. I mean, massive ones. And then what happens, what we've seen happen over the last few years, is their market caps do grow, but as they dilute to raise money to drill more and dilute to raise money to drill more, their share price doesn't move. It's just the market cap that grows. So how do you stay clear of that snake pit?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, in some regards, that could be, I would probably classify as value traps in some regards. But I think it really depends on how they're growing deposit. Like, there's some companies that you know, where projects have been recycled, a lot of companies have a tendency to play with the cutoff ratio. And you go from a 2 million ounce to a 3 million ounce deposit at like half the grade of the 2 million ounce. So in those cases, you know, investors beware. It's going to be up to the investor to investigate that, because the deposits that have been around for multiple cycles and they do have that size and the supposed, you know, production profile that the majors are looking at, there's obviously some hair somewhere that you need to find. Because if the deposit has size and it has the production profile and it has the supposed economics, then those things are going to get bought. They would have been bought already. And so when you see these multi, like I forget what International Tower Hill, for instance, I forget what their deposit's called, but that's a great one to reference because, you know, the last cycle I can remember, there was so much attention. Again, it was an optionality play. I think it was plus 10 million ounces, but you know, the thing just wasn't going to work. You know, the economic study, said whatever it did, but in reality, it's just, that's not the case. And, you know, people could see through it. So investors need to beware. And really, I guess that's the difference between your average investor and the people that are ultimately, you know, very successful is their ability to weed those out. You know, as Rick Rule says, he's like, just because you have a hunch doesn't mean you should bet a bunch. And, you know, you really have to be able to go through that technical report and find out why this project hasn't caught the attention of majors, especially if it is in those, like I said, big overall deposit size or production profile. Like what is keeping this from working? And, you know, investors need to be able to do that due diligence and put in the time to find that. But most of the time, those projects that have been recycled, you know, most of the time, they're just not going to work. And unfortunately, some of us have to learn the hard way. I've been there.
I think we all have, Brian. And in all fairness, some of these companies, look, they can be a trade because Chad is right. They can move quite nicely in a rising gold environment, but in a flat or down gold environment, these stocks can struggle. So it is all about understanding the work that the company is doing to hopefully move that needle, whether it does improve on the economics or even better, put it on the radar of some of these majors for a takeout, because we all know that Lassonde curve, and when companies go into construction, it can also be a time thing, right? And I know how everyone gets sometimes tired of just how long it can take for some of these stocks to move. Brian, it's great chatting with you. We're going to wrap it up here. It's unfortunate that the whole sector really continues to struggle, but boy, oh boy, you look at some of these developers, especially the ones that, I don't know, catch your eye or are a bit unique, they continue to sell off. So when the gold price rebounds, these will rebound as well. Brian, thanks as always for your time. I'll post a link to your website below and we'll chat again next week. Have a great rest of your week there, Brian.
Thanks for having me, guys.